100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, 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 it is Digital Sista, and I'm back. Thanks to my new friends in Switzerland who are downloading, and my friends who continue to tune in England, and my big fan base in Denver. Thanks so much for listening and continuing to pass the podcast around. Well, you know I got to weigh in on this one, the racial slur that was heard around the world. I'm talking about comedian Michael Richards, more popularly known as Kramer from the Seinfeld show. Well, he seems to be in a lot of hot water because of some comments that he said. And it's interesting that the news media has kind of left out some of the pieces to this picture, and they're just kind of giving part of the story. Now, I learned more about it by doing some more investigating to see what really happened. So apparently it all started last Friday night at the Laugh Factory, which is a comedy club in West Hollywood, West LA. So Michael Richards is doing his routine, and I guess maybe two black guys from the audience started heckling him and kind of telling him basically that he wasn't funny. Well, you know, he went into a rage, Michael Richards did, and said, I think, some really horrible things. And, you know, he was saying, shut up, you N-word. And then the interesting thing was what he said, because this is the part that was left out of the media. After he told these guys, after he called them the N-word a couple of times, and you heard some visible gasps in the audience like, oh my God, you know, that this was being said. Then he said to the guys, shut up. You know, if it were 50 years ago, we'd have you hanging with a fork up your behind. I'm using behind, but you know what I'm talking about. And he's referencing lynching, of course. And his comment after that was just as bad. He said, yeah, that's what happens when you interrupt a white man. Didn't you know that? And he continued on. And so finally, some people from the audience were just, you know, totally horrified. But in any event, that's the piece that was left out of the media that nobody's touching. So I thought that was very interesting. And then going back to what happened was he was invited back Saturday night, and he promised to apologize on the stage, which he did not do. And so the owner of the club, Jaime Masada, has permanently banned him from the stage of the Laugh Factory. And I mean, this thing took off and went around the world. I mean, everybody's talking about it. It's on the news, it's on the internet, it's on the talk shows. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld went on Letterman and set up a feed so that he could apologize and all of that. And I think it speaks to a big issue. And he's trying to apologize. He's looking real sheepish, you know, looking really scared. But again, as some of the people said from the TMZ website, which is the one that broke the story, like he said, you know, it can't be too heartfelt because, you know, he didn't apologize that Saturday night when he had the chance to, because he didn't think he had to. And I really don't think he expected it to take on a life of its own like this. And it really just speaks to the fact that, you know, racism is still alive and well. And in this day and age, it makes you wonder what he was thinking, because as a comic, you know, especially when you're doing stand-up comedy, you have to be used to people heckling you. And if you're a comic, you're quick on your feet with responses that are to be funny. But I think what this smacks of is something that's really inside of him, because he didn't just see these guys as hecklers, which he could have just played off and said, hey guys, come on, I'm the one up here doing the show. He could have said something like that. But it goes, you know, much deeper, because what he saw was, you know, these two black guys in this crowd who were heckling, and he went into a whole nother zone. And it makes you wonder, what does he see when he sees black men? That he would go into such a rage and say these horrible, horrible things. And you see, that is what is really in his heart. I don't care how he tries to apologize, that's what's in his heart. And I talked a little bit about when that happened with Mel Gibson. You know, there's some good qualities to Mel, and then there's obviously some things he needs to work on. But it's the same thing. You know, and when these guys say these things, and then they're checked and caught, and it's all over the media, you know, then they want to say, oh, but I'm not a racist. Well, I hate to say it, but I think that maybe you are. And one of the first things you have to do is admit that you are. Okay, we're in America. Everybody has a little tinge of bigotry with them. I don't, you know, you might want to say you don't, but we all do. Just being honest, we all have it. Put us in the right situation, it'll come out, okay? But just be honest about it, you know? Had he probably apologized Saturday night, you know, it might have quelled some things down. But by the fact that he didn't, he really felt that he could get away with it and that it was okay. And by Monday, what he learned was it wasn't okay. And it took on a life of its own. So I thought that was very interesting. So now we have some insight into who Michael Richards really is and how Michael Richards really feels when he possibly sees black men. You know, that's really the issue here, how he sees them. Because he didn't just say, hey guys, you know, cool it out, you know, let me finish my show, heckle me after I, you know, something, he could have just played it off. He went right for the jugular. He went into a rage, and he went into a rage that lasted about 3 minutes. Now, if you know history and you know the kind of things that have happened in the past, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that people can get killed behind. I mean, let's go way back to Emmett Till. You know, he was a 14-year-old boy on vacation down in Mississippi, I believe it was. And supposedly he whistled at a white woman. You know, these guys went into a rage over that and did some horrible things and killed this little boy, okay? So that's what we're talking about here. It's that rage. It was that rage that set Michael Richards off. It's that rage that has him in hot water. And it is that rage that had him saying some really insensitive things. And I think what we have to remember is we need to have empathy for people of other cultures and other races. And until we do, this kind of stuff is going to keep happening. You know, it's like the radio announcer who called Condoleezza Rice a coon. You know, he tried to make light of it and say he made a mistake. He knew exactly what he was saying. The same thing with Michael Richards. He knew exactly what he was saying. He just thought in the context of that club and probably in that audience, in that location of West LA, it would be okay and everything would be fine. Well, guess what, Michael? It's not. And you really have put your foot in it. But really, I think the sad part is you've really shown who you really are. And you can't get on TV and say, but I'm not a racist. Well, you know, I think you might be, and you need to look at that. The other thing I thought was very interesting is that they had Paul Rodriguez on, and apparently he was at the Laugh Factory when this occurred. And so he kind of had, I mean, I just had a different sense on TV when they interviewed him. He seemed to kind of backpedal a little bit as if to try to explain, you know, what he was trying to say. But in the newspaper, he was more focused on that, you know, it was wrong and that there's a limit to the First Amendment, you know, in terms of free speech and all of that. And so, you know, for those people who are trying to smooth it over and say it was a mistake and all that, I mean, you really have to look at it for what it is. And what it is just some really creepy comments by somebody who really felt like that. But getting back to what I was saying about Paul Rodriguez, what I found very interesting was that, and maybe it's happened, you know, since I've been at the office and away from the TV per se, but I really didn't see the news people or other commentators getting some, you know, African American comics on to see, you know, how they felt about this or, you know, what was their opinion. I mean, you get Paul Rodriguez. Yes, he may have been there, but there may have been somebody else there. Or you could get some of the comics that are well known. But, you know, they neglected to do that. And I also think that might be a factor, too, that some people may not want to weigh in because they're going to be worried about their careers, you know. But we have to stop that because, you know, if he was up on that stage spewing some stuff about Jewish people or spewing some really nasty stuff about Latinos or spewing some garbage about Asian people, and there were Asian people in the audience, you know, everybody would be offended, okay? Everybody would be offended. And in terms of Paul Rodriguez, if he was up on stage, you know, calling him some of the derogatory terms that we know to call people of Latino descent, I'm not even going to say it here because you know what they are, he would have a whole different attitude. They would be calling for him to be banned, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same thing they did with Mel Gibson when he made the comments about, you know, anti-Jewish comments. You know, why is it okay when people say the N-word and stuff like that, you got to smooth it over? No, let's address it for what it is. It's racist rage that came out. Racist rage that came out with Mel Gibson, and, you know, it wasn't a rage with the radio commentator, but again, he thought the atmosphere, it was okay for him to say something like that, and that's the problem. We have to stop thinking it's okay to make these negative comments, and then when you get checked on it, you want to get all over the media and try to apologize, but it's not very heartfelt because when you had the opportunity to do it, you didn't do it because you didn't think you had to. And so now he's really eating crow because this is the slur that was heard all around the world. And he's really squirming. And, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm sure he will work again. He may not work at the Laugh Factory, but, you know, somebody's going to work with him. But we kind of know where he stands. And so that's going to make it kind of difficult, I think, to look at the character of Kramer fondly. Because, see, now you know what Kramer / Michael Richards is really all about. And does he feel that way about other situations? Would he say that if he were at a comedy venue and some, you know, and some sisters, you know, said some comments? Would he, like, go off on them and say some horrible things to them? So it'll be interesting to see what the fallout will be for him. But I tend to think he had no idea that that was going to turn into the media brouhaha that it has. And, you know, that it's just gone all over the world. And everybody, I think, is just thoroughly, absolutely appalled. Let me move on from that. Ooh. What a week it was here in Cleveland. I mean, it's so sad because we lost our, you know, he was like our royalty in terms of music, you know, Gerald Levert. He was like, I think what Elvis, you know, was to Memphis, you know, that character that just kind of made the city their own, and particularly in the African American community. I mean, the OJs, Gerald Levert, I mean, they were royalty. And if you were lucky enough to be involved in their careers, you know, they were also an industry. Because it's sad now with the passing of Gerald, who was just 40 years old and a former Shaker Heights High School grad, as I was, you know, homeboy, you know. And it's just a very untimely situation, and we're really sad about that. But Cleveland was all abuzz because, I mean, all types of celebrities and entertainers were here in town last Thursday and Friday for Gerald's services. Thursday was a private memorial for the family and, you know, really, really close friends. And then Friday was the public memorial service at Public Hall, which was attended by thousands of people. I mean, Stevie Wonder was here, Yolanda Adams, Donnie Simpson, you know, Brian McKnight, I mean, Bobby Brown, Johnny Gill, Tom Joyner, I mean, just everybody was there, Patti LaBelle, I mean, everybody was there. And it really, I think, really showed how much people loved Gerald, number one, but it showed the breadth of his work. I mean, he was in the industry for maybe, you know, 20 plus years, and just the fact that he was just 40 years old and all of these people came to his service, I mean, that spoke volumes for his body of work. And I don't think people really realized it until, you know, unfortunately, with his passing. But if you can get the number of people who would fly into Cleveland for this service, I mean, all walks of life, all types of people, from record label execs, you know, DJs, you name it, just other singers that he's worked with. I mean, it was just incredible to see that they came out and came to Cleveland for Gerald. And they also renamed the street by WZAK, which is East 25th Street, Gerald Levert Way, which I think is, you know, really, really nice. Because although Gerald was, you know, a world-renowned R&B singer who probably could have lived anywhere he wanted to, he chose to, you know, remain and stay in Cleveland. And I think that was great because he really, he brought that industry here with him. He was big time, you know, he was really big time. And he never forgot about where he came from. And he didn't, he always helped people, from what I understand, gave people time, gave people their start, you know, was very, just had a really, really, really big heart. So we're really going to miss him. And like I said, with the last podcast, we're going to have Tech Whiz Michael Lilly on to just talk about some of the inside scoop, because he is a photographer and he was there and he's, you know, covered Gerald at various venues, parties, private parties, concerts, whatever. But he has some inside scoop that I'm sure you would all love to hear, you know, based on the folks that were there for Gerald's service. So it was really a big weekend. That was the unexpected, sad part of the weekend. But the other great thing that happened was great, was the original superstars of jazz fusion were in town. I'm talking about Roy Ayers, Gene Karn, Ronnie Laws, Lonnie Liston Smith, Bobby Humphrey, John Lucien, and Wayne Henderson. And it was such a cool show. But let me tell you about how I got there, because this is like really, really interesting. And it just shows how, you know, I'm going to try to bring you interesting things to talk about and share with you. But anyway, I was working with Michael on his project, shooting a scene for a film class. And he said, let's go over to the Agora. I said, okay. So we go tooling over there. And he had a media sign on his dashboard. So he threw that in on the dashboard. And we pull up to the parking lot. And the guy says, well, you can't go there. This is just for media. So Michael says, we are media. And the guy says, oh, well, somebody coming to get you. He said, yeah, yeah, somebody's coming to get us. He said, all right, well, go up. So we pulled up and parked. And Michael said, okay, wait here. I said, okay. So I waited. And he said, let me go see if the door is open. So he came back. He said, we can get in. I said, cool. And do you know, I was able to watch that concert, a good piece of it, from backstage. Oh, what a thrill it was, because I love these people. You know, I love Roy Ayers, and it was just so wonderful to see them, you know, because they were very, very hot, I would say, you know, about 30 years ago in the 70s, you know, and we haven't really heard too much about them, because they've been doing other things and other types of music have, you know, taken over. So you know, I'm seeing like Lonnie Liston Smith. Remember that? Expand Your Mind. Classic. Bobby Humphrey, you know, Harlem River Drive. I mean, she just burst onto the scene with Blue Note back in the day. John Lucien. Oh, my God. Remember that song, Gingy, he sang years ago? What a classic song that was. And unfortunately, he looked a little frail to me, so I hope he's okay. But he didn't look really well. But it was good to see him. Wayne Henderson, he was like pumping it out with his instruments. It was great. Ronnie Laws, he's put on a little bit of weight, but he still looked good with that dark suit and that saxophone. Oh, my God. And then there was Jean Carn. Remember Jean Carn back in the day? She used to be married to Doug Carn. I mean, she was still putting it down for the divas because everybody else was kind of comfortable that night, all but wearing their house shoes, okay? But Jean was giving us sequins. She was giving us stiletto heels. She was giving us this fabulous, fabulous kind of reddish blonde hair, and she was all about the diva and the singer that evening. Oh, it was just wonderful. And then I think the biggest treat was a little bit later, because the funny thing was, as I'm standing backstage, you know, because, you know, as they're playing and moving around, because, you know, Roy Ayers was dancing and moving around quite a bit on the stage, you know, and they all know who's pretty much backstage and traveling with them, you know, but there I am standing there, and they're all kind of like looking at me like, who is she? But, you know, they smiled, and I said, hey, great show, you know, acknowledged them. It was just so much fun. It was such a thrill to see these people who I have loved for like 30 plus years, okay? And the biggest treat, as I was saying a moment ago, was when Jimmy Scott came in. And he's a little frail now, which is, you know, sad to see, but you know, he came in and he sat down and he sang a great rendition of At Last. Now, my memories of him were when I lived in New York, there was a great club up in Harlem called Small's Paradise. This was the place everybody came to. And that night, I happened to be there. It was Houston Pearson and Etta James and Little Jimmy Scott. I think they finally dropped the little because, you know, he's an older man now. But Jimmy Scott. And he sang and just worked the crowd. And, you know, he was younger then and in much better health. So that was a very exciting thing to see back then. And let's fast forward about 30 years, and here he is. So it was a great thrill for me to be on stage, backstage, watching my favorite artist get down and play the music that I love. And I was looking out into the crowd. It was a packed house. And at one point toward the end of the show, because they all came out and they were singing a lot of each other's songs, like Lonnie Liston Smith, Expand Your Mind. And people were like running down to the stage holding their old LPs from back in the day in the 70s. You know, here was this picture of John Lucien, sexy John Lucien, a picture of Roy Ayers, you know, picture of Ronnie Laws, Gene Carn. So it was just a great, great show. And it was great to hear people just really jamming and really just enjoying what they do. And I hope that, you know, at some point that they will come around again. If they come to your city, please check out the show, because, you know, with the way music is now and the way that hip hop is really taken over, we don't really get to hear a lot of these classic fusion jazz artists. You know, they were hot before smooth jazz came along, okay? Well, let me go off on my tirade about smooth jazz, but hey, this is the place to do it. Now, Roy Ayers and the other five members that I talked about, these were the smooth jazz artists back in the day. They were the first ones. And so what happened was back in the, I'd say probably the early 90s, a new format came onto the scene. It was called smooth jazz. And we really know what smooth jazz is. Smooth jazz was about creating a genre for primarily white artists. And they're not necessarily jazz artists. Some of them were new age artists. Some of them were new age artists trying to be jazz artists. But they weren't like straight ahead jazz artists. But that's where smooth jazz came from. That's who smooth jazz is for. And if you listen to a lot of the smooth jazz format, you don't even hear any of their music being played, you know, which is a shame because they had some classic stuff. I would say Donald Byrd would be in that category too, after he, you know, stopped playing with the Blackbirds. But, you know, smooth jazz, that's what it was. It was a format created for the white jazz community. And it pretty much was kind of closed. You know, there's a few people that they would play, like the Barry Whites, Norman Brown. But think about it. If you listen to a lot of the smooth jazz formats, you know, it's primarily for the white jazz audience. It's not, you know, really taking into consideration, and that's why they call it the original superstars of jazz fusion. So it was just wonderful to see them, and I hope that maybe some of the stations will, you know, dust off their music and play it some more, because it really is great music that has stood the test of time. I mean, this music sounds just as fresh today as it did 30 years ago when they recorded it. So anyway, it was just an exciting thing for me to be on stage, backstage, with these people that I just thoroughly, thoroughly love, and seeing them. I mean, Bobby Humphrey, she's so tiny and petite. She's got to be like 4'11", you know. I think the flute was almost taller than her. I didn't realize she was so very tiny. But, you know, Lonnie, John, Wayne, and Ronnie, they're still looking pretty good, still looking pretty good. But anyway, I just had to tell you about that. I was just so excited. It was a great night. And it was a big weekend in Cleveland last weekend with all the folks in for Gerald services and then this concert going down Friday night. It was a lot going on, and it was, like, really cool to be part of it. But, yeah, as we're talking about the music, I'm just loving my iPod. I am in iPod heaven. And speaking about, you know, the original superstars, what I've been able to do with this wonderful little gadget, the iPod, is download a lot of this music that I really haven't heard in a really long time. I mean, I've got Donald Byrd on there. I'm going to add some Bobby Humphrey. But that is what's so wonderful about the iPod, that now I'm able to carry all this great fusion music from back in the day on my iPod. I mean, it's great. It's really, really great. And I'm just having so much fun with it. I kind of wonder what took me so long. I know what took me so long. I had to wait until I really felt like I really wanted one. But I'm so glad that I did. But anyway, make sure that you get one, and you could put a lot of your favorite music on that you don't really hear too much anymore. And speaking of music, I mean, Jay-Z, he's coming out with a new album. I don't want to say album, but CD. You know, what's it called? Kingdom Come. And it's interesting because he has branched off into so many things. He's, you know, doing water systems and wells in Africa. You know, he's got some sports bars, clubs, restaurant, whatever you want to call it. He's got fashion. He's, you know, the head of Def Jam Records. But all in all, he still is a rap star. And I think no matter what a lot of them do in terms of branching onto other things, it's probably still very hard to stay out of the limelight. Because, you know, rap is very much built on the ego and the persona and the character that you play. So it's probably very hard, you know, once you've had a taste of that, to step out and do other things. And eventually you want to come back. I mean, isn't that what happened with Michael Jordan, the greatest player in the world? He retired. He tried, you know, being the general manager with the Wizards and all of that. You know, then he came back and played, I think, twice, and it, you know, it just didn't work because he's older now, and then these young guys are like 20 and 18, so he couldn't really, you know, keep up with that. Then the Wizards fired him, you know, then Bob Johnson bought the Hornets, and so he got involved with that. And so I think he's probably finally realized that, you know, it's time to step out of the limelight and kind of do other things. And so I think that's probably the dilemma that some of the hip-hop stars, you know, find themselves in. It's probably just very hard to step out of the limelight and not be, you know, the man, the one, so to speak, on stage. So, you know, I hope it works, and it probably will, because he's been away for a little while. And look at Snoop. I mean, he's doing, you know, the commercials. He's got a couple of businesses and things like that. But he just dropped a new CD. I think it's called the Black Carpet Treatment or the Blue Carpet Treatment, something like that. But in any event, he's gotten back together with Dr. Dre, and the new CD has some of the flavor and feel from the gangster music that put them both on the map, you know, back in the 90s. So I would say, you know, once you get a taste of being that rap star out in front, it's probably very hard to not want to come back. So I hope when they do come back that you still can put out, you know, really good music that people want to hear. You know, just don't come back because you can't stay away. Come back because you have something to say. Come back because you want to share a new direction in your music with us. But come back with a purpose, you know. Don't come back just because your ego won't let you sit still. Come back because you still have something left that you want to say. I mean, that's what Ice Cube did too. He was away from rap for about 7 years making movies and doing great things. But, you know, the lure of being the MC and being out there up front and having that street credibility with your music is probably too strong. So he just released a new CD earlier this year. So it's interesting to see that it's hard to stay away. And then when you look at somebody like Janet, I mean, I know she has investments with the One United Bank and some other things, but, you know, it's time to step out and do some other things, Janet. You know, this last album, as I talked about in the previous podcast, tanked. It didn't go anywhere. You know, it's time for you to produce, you know, work on producing some films for yourself or produce some other artists, you know. Don't try to stay out there all the time, you know, mix it up a little bit. Try to go back to your roots, you know, with what really worked. But, you know, who am I to say? I just hope that she will figure it out and get back to what she does really well, because this last thing did not work at all. You know, Jermaine's trying to do this baby doll thing with her, and that just is not working. So I hope she wakes up and goes back to Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam and really puts out some good stuff. Doesn't have to be, you know, the same stuff she put out before, but some updated, you know, stuff that and music that really reflects who she is, not this baby doll coquettish stuff whispering French into our ears. Okay, I've gone off enough about that. In any event, I just think that's probably all I'm going to say right now. I want to talk about nonprofits. Come July, not July, but January 16th, I'm going to be doing a show on my radio program, www.globaltalkradio.com, with my show, Demystifying Nonprofits. And we're going to be talking about branding and branding as it relates to what nonprofits need to know about that. So if you're a nonprofit or really any organization, you know, struggling with brand marketing, how you're going to get your story out and what the name of your organization conjures up when people hear it. I mean, that's all about brand marketing. So if you're struggling with that, please be sure to tune into my show on January 16th, because I'm going to be talking with Larry Checo, who's a branding expert that I interviewed on my show way back in April. And, you know, we've since developed a nice rapport. But I think that would be a good thing for you to check out if you're struggling with how to market your organization and things that you might want to consider. Well, in any event, I think that is about it for Digital Sister 41. I can't believe I've been podcasting over a year now. It's just amazing to me. But, you know, again, I thank you for tuning in. It's really a privilege to talk with you and to share commentary with you. And, you know, I just look forward to hearing from you. So give me a call. Leave me a message at 206- 309-7325 if you have some reflections on the slur heard around the world or anything else. I would just really love to hear from you. But in any event, I want you all to have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. Have a happy Thanksgiving. You know, eat yourself silly because that's the thing to do. And just have a wonderful time with friends and family. So I'm going to be back with you in a couple of days. And in a couple of days, we'll have Mike Lilly, our tech whiz and our inside man on some of these celebrity junkets. He's going to be here to give us some interesting insights into some of the people that we read about all the time. So in any event, take care. Digital Sister signing out. I'll be back with you in a few days. Take it easy. You can't mess with this.